Hey, thanks for joining us. If you like the content, subscribe and leave a comment because it helps us to create more. Some time ago, we did an episode about Kung Fu. Well, I decided to supplement this with my own episode on the history of martial arts in America. Why? Well, growing up as a kid in the late 20th century U.S., I bore witness to some pretty interesting trends in the world of martial arts. And these trends really had an effect on pop culture to this day. Those who share my experiences will likely agree, and for you, I offer a nostalgic look back. And for our younger audience members, well, it's a window to an earlier time that we hope you'll find interesting. It's the history of martial arts in America on History Unpacked. But first off, a little bit of an operant definition. What exactly do we mean by martial arts? Well, technically, any sort of fighting system is a martial art. So by that metric, probably the first instance of martial arts in America were the warfare techniques practiced by the indigenous North American people, followed by the boxing and wrestling techniques carried over by the British. But come on, when we think of martial arts, what we really think of is guys in white gis and obis breaking boards with their feet and stuff like that. Or do you think of guys like George St. Pierre and John Bones Jones trying to armbar each other in the UFC ring? Well, if it's the former, then you're probably about my age. Anyway, the point is, we usually think of martial arts as having some sort of Asian roots, and that's what we're talking about today. So, the first incidence of martial arts, as we've defined it, in America comes from Asian immigrants. Chinese immigrants to America and Japanese immigrants to Hawaii, which at that time wasn't a state. However, it mostly existed only within these communities, partly due to American anti-Chinese sentiment at that time. So, probably the first exposure Americans got to martial arts was in the late 1800s. To Japanese martial arts. You see, around this time, Japan had opened back up to the world following its period of isolation, and it was looking to promote its culture abroad. Additionally, there was a new form of martial art that had appeared in Japan based on the principles of jujitsu and revolutionized by a man named Jiguro Kano. That style was called judo, and its creators were trying to propagate it. So, now we have judo and jujitsu popping up around America. At this point, it's seen more as a curiosity than anything, with competitions sometimes showing up in vaudeville shows and the like. But at least one famous American was legitimately interested in it, Theodore Roosevelt, the 26th President of the United States, and also the source of the term teddy bear. Also, I should mention that around the same time in England, a gentleman named Edward William Barton Wright was also doing his part to popularize Japanese martial arts in England. Having traveled to Japan, Barton Wright took what he had learned in the East and applied it to the world of urban England with a style known as Bartitsu, but that's a story for another day. Anyway, just as Japanese culture was gaining a foothold in the West, Japan sort of made a bad decision and backed the wrong world leader, so that kind of put a damper on things. But not really, because at this time, a Navy seaman named Robert Trejas went to the South Pacific. It was there that he encountered Asian martial arts, which he brought back to the U.S. And according to my research, Trejas was the first person to start a martial arts school that catered to the average American. His school opened in 1948, but during the 50s and 60s, many others followed, such as Ed Parker, Joe Louis, George Mattson, Jun Ri, and Peter Urban, just to name a few. Not only that, but there were also some Japanese and Okinawans immigrating to and promoting their craft in the States. Individuals like Hidetaka Nashiyama, Teruyuki Okazaki, Nakayuki Mikami, and Tsutomu Oshima. Pardon my pronunciation on some of those. I looked them up and I couldn't find much information, so I'm guessing at these. Anyway, in addition to them, there, of course, was everyone's favorite bearded internet superhero, Chuck Norris, who brought back his experiences with Korean martial arts in the 1960s. This was also when the first martial arts magazine, Black Belt Magazine, saw publication in 1961, and this was a major indicator in the growing popularity of martial arts. Finally, in 1964, judo appeared as an Olympic sport, which created even further interest and familiarity with martial arts in the West. But, as many fans of this broadcast might know, the real boost to the popularity of martial arts came in the 1970s when a young Hong Kong-American named Bruce Lee exploded onto the scene and screen of American pop culture. Lee's films like Enter the Dragon stoked the flames of Western interest in martial arts like nothing before. By the way, interesting bit of trivia, Bruce Lee once was friends with Hollywood stuntman and martial artist Gene LaBelle, who in turn was friends with Ben Springer, a martial artist from Dubuque, Iowa, who also illustrated some of LaBelle's books. And Springer was my martial arts instructor, so I'm only 3 degrees separated from Bruce Lee himself. Anyway, while all of these karate schools were opening, America was also getting exposure to another facet of martial arts, ninjas. Now let's skip forward a bit. When I was a kid growing up, people loved ninjas. They were everywhere. Halloween costumes, movies, video games like Shinobi or Ninja Gaiden, and the like. But where did this come from? Well, America's first introduction to ninjas probably came from samurai-themed works, like the films of Akira Kurosawa. But what really brought ninjas to the public's attention was the James Bond novel, You Only Live Twice. And yes, that was written by Ian Fleming, who was British, so, you know, there's some overlap between America and England here. And of course, You Only Live Twice was later made into a movie that showed the stereotypical ninjas in face masks descending from ropes with swords on their backs. You Only Live Twice, by the way, was indicative of a growing interest in the West with Asian culture. Anyway, later in 1970, Andrew Adams published the book Ninja, The Invisible Assassins, a nonfiction book about everything we think about when we hear the word ninja. Throwing stars, black uniforms, wall climbing, that sort of thing. Now, I haven't read enough of the book nor done enough research into ninjas to know how accurate it is, but History Unpacked is preparing an episode that goes deeper into the history of the ninja. So, if you'd like to know more, subscribe and keep an eye on your notifications so you can know when our episode on ninjas goes live. Although, if it's a ninja episode, you won't know it's out until it's too late. In any case, following Adams' book, the ninja movies started coming. Enter the Ninja, American Ninja, Revenge of the Ninja, Samurai Cop. And finally, in the 90s, interest in ninjas reached its zenith with the advent of the cartoon comic book characters, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles, if you're in the UK. So, this brings us back to late 20th century America. At this point, interest in martial arts was at an all-time high, sparked by the work of pioneers like Trehas and Rhee, stoked by Bruce Lee, and with the ninja mythos adding fuel to the fire. And this is where things started to get weird. You see, here, America was at a point where the world had become just global enough for the average person to have a tertiary knowledge of foreign cultures, but at the same time, there was enough ignorance that these cultures were still often viewed with an element of exoticism or even mysticism. And some martial artists exploited that. A good example was John Keehan, who later came to call himself Count Dante and claimed that he knew the secret to the dim mak, or touch of death. There was also Frank Dux, inspiration for the movie Bloodsport, who claimed to have studied under ninja masters, but subsequent investigation revealed that these ninja masters never existed. Even I remember training under some instructors, certainly not Ben Springer, who was a wonderful instructor, but other ones who taught about the legitimacy of obviously impractical techniques, or how one can harness ki energy, or that a well-trained fighter could take on multiple opponents at once. Often this sort of nonsense was blended with manufactured systems of ethics that were borderline cult-like. Gym owners and black belts were to be viewed as unquestionable authority figures and required obedience if one hoped to learn their secrets. But sometimes there wasn't even necessarily ill intent behind this sort of thing. It was just that the line between fact and fiction had really gotten blurred at a certain point. I mean, the idea that you were studying and or teaching secret supernatural techniques from the mysterious East, who wouldn't want to believe that? So I'm not saying that all martial arts in the 80s and 90s was nonsense. There was a lot of good instruction that came out of those times. Things that not only help with self-defense, but self-discipline and the building of personal values as well. However, there was also a lot of things that were impractical or even devious. And then, in the early 90s, all that changed. See, remember when I talked about how Japan was promoting judo and jiu-jitsu in the USA? Well, they were doing it in Brazil as well. And it caught the attention of a family with the name of Gracie. And this was the birth of, you guessed it, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. The Gracie family eventually became so influential in the world of martial arts that they took part in the creation of the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Now, this was big news at the time. I remember some news show, I think it was like Dateline NBC or something, reporting on it. They were like, they call it the Octagon. And I remember regarding it with disdain. You know, to me, martial arts was all about integrity, self-discipline, and sportsmanship. And, you know, to hear reports of men just beating the crap out of each other for the sake of clout, well, it just seemed so uncouth. Now, I later came to change my mind about all of that. But in any case, the UFC demonstrated the limitations of martial arts that we Americans had come to view as almost a sort of wizardry. Suddenly, these masters of the mystic arts of the Far East were just ordinary guys, and everyone suddenly realized the necessity of incorporating ground fighting and submission holds with their striking techniques. In other words, mixing their martial arts. All right, now, to be clear, the concept of mixed martial arts was nothing new. As far as I understand, even Trias's original school mixed elements from various styles. But it wasn't uncommon for some martial artists to espouse the philosophy that you had to commit yourself to one style in order to avoid becoming a jack of all trades but master of none. In my experience, this was usually done in order to keep students from shopping around at different gyms. But this is where the idea of mixed martial arts, or MMA, really became a key concept in martial arts. And that pretty much brings us to the current state of martial arts in the West. For the most part, Eastern martial arts are no longer viewed as exotic purveyors of mystic and superhuman abilities, but as something that needs to be approached with a practical mindset. And that's probably a good change. Regardless, for those of us who remember, it was a long and interesting journey. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.